ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 3 चैप्टर 9 टेक्स्ट 29 ट्रांसलेशन एंड कमेंट्री बाय His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Ma Veda Garbha Gastandrin Sarga Udyamam Avaha Tanmaya Paditang Hyagre Yanmam Pratayate Bhavan. The Supreme Personality of Godhead then said, O Brahma, O depth of Vedic wisdom, be neither depressed nor anxious about the execution of creation. What you are begging from me has already been granted before. Purport. Any person authorized by either the Lord or by his bona fide representative is already blessed, as is the work entrusted to him. Of course, the person entrusted with such a responsibility should always be aware of his incapability and must always look for the mercy of the Lord for the successful execution of his duty. One should not be puffed up because he is entrusted with certain executive work. Fortunate is he who is so entrusted, and if he is always fixed in the sense of being subordinate to the will of the Supreme, he is sure to come out successful in the discharge of his work. Arjuna was entrusted with the work of fighting on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and before he was so entrusted, the Lord had already arranged for his victory. But Arjuna was always conscious of his position as subordinate to the Lord, and thus he accepted him as the supreme guide in his responsibility. Anyone who takes pride in doing responsible work but does not give credit to the Supreme Lord is certainly falsely proud and cannot execute anything nicely. Brahma and persons in the line of his disciplic succession who follow in his footsteps are always successful in the discharge of loving transcendental service to the Supreme Lord. I chose this verse to speak on this morning, as we are scheduled to have after this a meeting of leaders, of those who are serving in leadership capacities under my guidance. There are many leadership courses, seminars, books, gurus, leadership gurus. Here we have in this purport a completely different perspective on leadership than you'll get in any of these kami courses on leadership. There are so many courses on leadership and schools here in India. They advertise that training leaders of the future. Then the parents are supposed to become excited to send their children to such a school which will train their child as a leader. In Vedic culture, those who are to be leaders are trained from the very beginning, generally by the family system. There are spiritual leaders or religious leaders, brahmanas, and administrative leaders, the kshatriyas. So their whole culture is one of leadership. And others are trained in following. There are many leadership courses. We don't see any courses in followership. It's very difficult to lead if people have no proper conception of following. So the whole situation in the modern world is completely mad, as you probably all noticed. There's a whole history of how the natural divine order, hierarchical order, based on submission to God, broke down all over the world. And now there are various speculative systems in place, such as, well, democracy is the regnant model, supposed democracy at the present time. But it's very difficult to lead in the modern age in so many ways. It's difficult. So we should be appreciative of those who are taking the lead. We see that Krishna here assures Brahma, or don't be depressed, don't be anxious. It looks like you've got an practically impossible task. It would be impossible for Brahma, but Krishna was there to help him. And Krishna also told him, what you're asking for me, it's already been granted before. So it's already been done. Every day of Brahma, he creates. So a devotee who takes the role of leadership, it's very difficult in so many ways. Of course, there are some who relish that also. They born leaders, natural leaders. That's the kshatriyas. They are certain qualities they pick up. They have from their very birth. That means it's taken on from previous life. That what is that? Sharyo tejas tritisho cham yudhe chapyapalayanam danam ishvara bhavascha kshatram karmasva bhavajam. Is the natural tendency, inborn tendency, that means acquired from previous life, and also imbibed from the very family and the culture that they are raised in, to be heroic, dynamic, shauryam teja, to have strong determination, to be expert in various dealings, to not run away in battle, to be generous in giving charity, and to Ishvara Bhav, a natural spirit of taking charge. So that is the spirit of a kshatriya. So we find that even today, in this very disordered society, but some people, and among them some who take to devotional service, some devotees also, they have this, they can take charge. They have that spirit to do so. I personally, very shortly after joining the movement, I think within a few weeks, I was made the treasurer at Bhaktivedanta Manor. So although I was very junior in the movement, I had to deal with the various leaders. And it wasn't an easy job because there wasn't much money, and I had to give it out. But the treasurer's job, as Prabhupada said, is not to give money out. He should take it. The treasurer's feeling should be he likes to accept money, but not to give it out. And there was very limited to give out also. It's not like nowadays at Bhaktivedanta Manor. So I saw from a very early time in the movement that it's not very easy to be a leader of any kind. So we should glorify all devotees and especially appreciate those who have taken the trouble to take responsibility in this movement. As Srila Prabhupada writes here, any person authorized by either the Lord or by his bona fide representative is already blessed. Just the one who is an authorized leader is already blessed. Of course, if someone just sets them up and sets themselves up and becomes a self-professed leader without any reference to any higher authority, such a person is called an upstart. Brahma was feeling some trepidation because he saw that the task ahead of him is difficult. Generally, it's presumed that people, they would rather be in a higher position than a lower position in society. It's considered also by pious activities, one gets the role of a king. But it's not all just parading with brass bands, as will be tomorrow, Republic Day here, with the chief minister of Gujarat will come here, and presumably there'll be some brass bands and some pomp and grandeur. But that might seem very relishable to someone who's in the crowd. They might think, well, I would like to be the one up on the pedestal rather than just another face in the crowd. But up on the pedestal means that one also has to take so much responsibility. And there are many difficult decisions to take, so it's not so easy. So one of the qualities of a kshatriya is dhriti, determination to go through various difficulties, from small difficulties to big ones. Small difficulties means we often find devotees come or others come with some very minor matter, which they think is, in their estimation, it's something overwhelming and you have to do something about it, you being the leader. And their whole mind is completely obsessed with this. Meanwhile, you have actual real problems to deal with. But in the mind of that person, that is a real problem. We have to deal with all kinds of people, in Kali Yuga especially. People tend to be very strange, and those who are leaders, they may not be exempted from that also. Material desires make people strange, stranger and stranger. The further you go away from Krishna consciousness, the more strange you become. Then you get down in the depths of tamagun, you get people who don't bathe for weeks. They're partially or completely insane. They're like ghosts. In sattvagun, people there's some hope of civilization. There should be at least some modicum of sattvagun. But in tamagun, people are very, very, very strange, as if totally ghostly haunted. And that's increasingly the situation in Kali Yuga. And those who come to devotional service, it's not that they all of a sudden become free from the influence of Kali Yuga. We bring into devotional service not only the desire to be Krishna conscious, but also all the conditioning which we've acquired over previous lives and in this life. So one of our leaders, I was told at the last year's ISKCON Leadership Sangha, something like this, he was talking about the preaching in modern ISKCON and taking leadership, and he said that nowadays it's very difficult to find anyone who wants to be a temple president in ISKCON. It used to be almost like a competition. Who can get the spot? Devotees used to fight over it in the West. Not so much physically. They'd fight physically over other things. But there would be... at one point, Srila Prabhupada said that there should be voting for the temple president, should be voted in. But then he vetoed that, Because actually, so in particularly at Bhaktivedanta Manor, just before I joined, there was a lot of politics going on, with one devotee trying to get rid of the town president and put himself in. But it was a relishable post, because why? Well, the devotees, they were prepared to follow. It's more relishable to be a leader if those who are supposed to be followers are prepared to follow, which is not very much the case at the present time in the Western world. So it's very difficult to find town presidents unless you pay them a lot of money, which is one way of getting them. But then in a lot of places, they don't have a lot of money to give them either. I don't think they do that in America at all, because there's so much outcry against it in some places. So when in our movement that was a lot of prestige attached with being the town president, and the movement was rolling, dynamic, then many devotees wanted to be town president. Now it's in a bit of a slough, or a slough is like a patch of mud. You know, if you drive a car into a patch of mud, it tends to get stuck there. So now it's in a rut, that's the word. So it's very difficult to find those who want to be town presidents in those conditions, which suggests that those who are actually serving simply for the sake of serving, or taking leadership roles for the sake of, it may not be just purely out of pure devotional service. When it's difficult, we'll see who actually wants to serve. When, of course, it's never easy, but when there's, like I say, lots of money coming in, lots of prestige attached to it, then it's easy to find or those who want to take that role. But when times are difficult, then it's not so easy. Here in India, still the movement is going on quite positively. We pray that there's no implosion as there has been in other places, but then we would see who actually wants to serve and be leaders. Anyway, I was saying that a devotee one of our leaders at this, he was giving a talk on the challenges of preaching Krishna consciousness in the Western world in the modern age, and one of the things he said, it's very difficult to find devotees who will take the role of a temple president. And then he cynically commented, "Who wants to be a zookeeper?" In other words, his perception of running a temple was something like running a zoo. But actually in a zoo, it's more ordered, and the animals, they tend to, you know, they're kept in cages, and you can, if you feed them, they're somewhat cooperative. Whereas there's no such guarantee in the Krishna consciousness movement. It might be, from the point of view of peace of mind, it's probably better to be a zookeeper than a temple president in ISKCON. Now, well, I said it now. Probably none of the leaders would disagree, although I might get pulled up for that one. Anyway, it's going to be difficult, but we should continue, despite difficulties, not to give up just because it's difficult. That's rajasic, that tyaga. If one gives up, if one renounces because things are too difficult, then that is rajasic. Of course, it may be that one perceives oneself to be not very well fitted to deal with the situation. I myself was in the role of temple president and then regional secretary. I don't think that post any longer exists, but that was a big post previously. But I decided to stop having such an executive role, because I saw I'm not very well suited for that. Let others do it. Others who might be better suited for that. I thought it wasn't good for me or good for others. So difficulties will be there. And the service of a leader is to go on and lead and develop the Krishna consciousness movement within a certain area, either a physical area, mostly physical area, which means dealing with difficulties as they arise. Bhaktivinoda Thakur has taught us, Tomar Shebai Duk Hoi Joto Sheito Paramashuk. He said that in your service, Krishna, whatever difficulties arise, they are cause of great happiness, supreme happiness. Shiva Shukha Dukha Parama Sambade Nashaye Abhidya Dukha. The difficulties and the high points in Krishna's service, by absorption in that, we're able to overcome the distress of being in Maya. When we understand we're doing this all for Krishna, then we overcome ignorance. On the mundane platform, we're on the platform of sankalpa vikalpa. What do I like? What don't I like? But on the platform of Krishna consciousness, we think in terms of what does Krishna want? What does Krishna not like? That can be in our own individual life and also in guiding a project or whatever role of leadership is. Well, leadership means there are followers, and in Krishna conscious, followers will like to follow if the leader set a Krishna conscious example. Of course, the position is there. One is supposed to respect the position. So if someone's in the position of a town president, then he should be followed, just because that's the law of discipline. But if simply by the name of the post one expects others to follow, they might follow, but not with much spirit. For them to be really enthusiastic and cooperative, then the leader has to set a good example. If the leader doesn't set a good example, then others won't also. Just one example, I remember being shocked once when I was trying to get a devotee up for Mangalati. He had practically taken a solid vow never to get up for Mangalati, although he was living in the ashram, and I was in such a situation where I think there was just me and him, maybe there were two or three others at the time. So we were just, if anyone was willing to do any kind of service, we'd try and engage them. But he wouldn't get up in the morning. So I said, why don't you get up? Prabhupada wanted us to get up in the morning for Mangalati. And he said, well, my guru doesn't. That was his answer. What can you say? Gurus in Maya or what? So there's leading by practice and by precept. Precept means giving orders, and practice means showing by example. So an acharya means one who teaches from Shastra and lives according to Shastra. And Srila Prabhupada said about his GBC members, in the topmost position of leadership in the society, he said they should all be acharya-like, spiritual leadership. So leadership qualities can be seen in the devotees serving under his guidance. If they're enthusiastic, working selflessly with the spirit of sacrifice, committed, working hard, how they deal with others, how is their sadhana, what is their preaching spirit, how much they're actually advancing and understanding this philosophy, reading the books. Srila Prabhupada reportedly said, if the temple is clean, the management is good. That's a good test. So the leader leads by his qualities, and the qualities either positive or negative or mixed, anishtam, ishtam, mishram, cha, that will tend to be reflected in the followers. If the leader himself has got some particular anartha, then that will tend to be reflected in the followers, because they either consciously or subliminally, they tend to imbibe the qualities of those who are their leaders. So a good leader then is sets a good standard in all respects, which again, that in itself is a great challenge. It's not only a great challenge dealing with the various difficulties, for instance, getting permission to put a road when all the village people, you want to build a temple, you want to put a road, the village people are against it, or they want some really extortionate bribe. These are the kind of difficulties, or kind of difficulties happen all the time. You're just peacefully chanting around, someone runs in and says that devotee got an electric shock and has to be taken to hospital immediately. Of course, if you don't have electricity in your temples, then you won't get that one. I might get bitten by a snake. That's also possible. In the country ashrams, they say, oh, it's so dangerous, there are snakes. Yes, danger from snakes in our farm projects. No doubt about it, danger from snakes. There's no danger from electric shocks or getting run over by a bus. So you trade your difficulties or your dangers. There's danger everywhere. Either snake danger or bus danger. So the leader may be difficulties all the time. But it's also, in the midst of all that, has to maintain a good standard of Krishna consciousness by hearing and chanting. It's easy to just throw that all in. I've got so many things to do, so many things. Okay, I'll chant my rounds later and skip the programs. But then if he does that, then his ability, the strength to perform that service in a Krishna conscious manner, he'll lose that. And then he may start to deal in a manner of just do it because I said it. Manner. And others will also follow, and then they'll also become less Krishna conscious, and the whole thing spirals down. So amid so many difficulties, of course, if someone is feeling overwhelmed by the difficulties, then he's probably not fit to be a leader anyway, because it's just something to be expected, one thing after another, especially as you're trying to push on the movement more and more, pushing against Maya. Maya pushes back in various ways. The leader has to relish that challenge and keep, first thing, keep oneself strong. There may be a few corners cut here and there, but Srila Prabhupada also said that if the temple president sees that all the devotees are rising early, chanting 16 rounds, following the principles, attending the programs, and fully engaged. In other words, the first responsibility of the leader is to see that devotees under him are following the basic practices of Krishna consciousness. And Srila Prabhupada wrote, if the leader does that, then the devotees under him managing will be just like in your hand. It'll be a very easy thing to do. That will follow. In other words, the devotees will be happy to follow. So they'll be happy to follow because they respect the leader, the temple president. There are different ways to encourage people to do what you say. What, the best way, and certainly the Krishna conscious way, is by respect. Another way is by fear. If you don't do it, then the leader will yell at you or impose some kind of punishment on you. Of course, those in a position of authority, they also have to exercise it sometimes when followers are not following properly. But respect, following out of respect rather than out of fear. Another way is by paying people. You can get them to do what you want to some extent, but that's not part of our Krishna consciousness. Of course, we may pay construction workers or maybe an accountant or whatever, but if we can't pay people to be devoted. Srila Prabhupada was especially against having paid pujaris and teachers. So the respect, at least having something like a Krishna conscious, I hope Krishna conscious management seminar here, but saying leaders should be respected. But actually, if it's not there, then if that's not there automatically, then you probably shouldn't all be sitting here listening to this anyway. Just like in these management seminars, they talk about the qualities of leaders, but if people don't have them inherently in those qualities inherently in them, then to try and develop them 30 years into your life or whatever, it's not going to happen. But anyway, those who have it, the genuine leaders, they're respected, not artificially, but because of their actual Krishna consciousness, and because they are, and this is another major point of a Krishna conscious leader, he's genuinely concerned for those who are his wards. That's something which we don't get in mundane leadership. Mundane leadership means, how do I go up? And some companies, multinational corporations, they've understood that it's also important to look after your important employees. So in a big corporation like Hewlett Packard, for those who are employees who are, for instance, writing software, they try to keep, because they can always jump from one company to another at the offer of a better job. Better job means more pay, generally. So they try to keep them by giving them health benefits, free checkups every year, give them housing and swimming pool, gymnasium, and try to look after them. Not that they care about them, but they think that if they at least make a show of caring for them, then they're more likely to keep those employees, and then they don't have to hire someone else and train them again. Someone doesn't leave in the middle of a project and becomes very difficult. So they may make a show of caring for others because they find it's a good way to run their business. But a Krishna conscious devotee is not like that. He cares for others because, well, he also learned it from his leader. We learned, we imbibe from Srila Prabhupada, we hope that we imbibe that from Srila Prabhupada, that the caring for others. In the history of ISKCON, two of the devotees from the earlier days of ISKCON, who are so much remembered as being great devotees, were Jayananda and Vishnujan. And they had many qualities. Vishnujan, in many ways, was a very extraordinary preacher, kirtan leader. But what really endeared them, both of them, to others, was their largeness of heart in their actually caring for the spiritual and even the material benefit of others. They wanted others to be Krishna conscious. And that was apparent in how they dealt with people. Even though they were very much respected, they didn't put on airs or take advantage of that. So they're very much loved for that. There may be others also who talk a lot about love and caring, but it might not seem to go much more than theoretical, the theoretical stage. They worked out if they talk about loving others and caring, and then they'll be respected as a loving, caring person. The mind can work in very twisted ways. If one wants to go down in history as a great saint, one may make a show of being a great saint. Because we see, for instance, Mother Teresa was so much appreciated for her charitable activities in helping the poor. Of course, there are so many people helping the poor, but anyway, somehow or other, she got in the limelight. So we may think that, oh, she's so caring and loving, and so many people appreciated her. I want to be appreciated like that. Okay, what did she do? She cared for the, she fed the poor. She looked after the sick. Okay, I'm going to do that. But the whole motive is how to be appreciated. It's not actually caring for the sick and the poor. So from the beginning, the motive is back to front. So it may be that one is seen as being loving and caring, but really that's not the central motive. So in Krishna consciousness anyway, we're not that much interested in fact we're not interested at all intrinsically in opening hospitals or even feeding the poor. Callous as it may sound, as Srila Prabhupada demonstrated when he was asked to lend some help for the drought-stricken people of Andhra Pradesh, and Srila Prabhupada refused. He said, our movement's not meant for that. So it may seem callous, but Srila Prabhupada was interested in benefiting people in a manner that they can actually be benefited, not in some artificial way. We should distinguish, we're talking about leadership, we should be actually very careful about corporate style management and trying to bring this in to our society and learning from success, seven habits of highly successful people, or whatever. There are so many. So in that Seven Habits book, some of the things he says, I haven't read it actually, but it's just like living. I never saw an Amitabh Bachchan film either, but I know the name very well, Amitabh Bachchan, and I never saw Sachin Tendulkar play cricket. But when you're living in the atmosphere, you know, you have to know something when it's all around you. So I also, although I never read the Seven Habits of Highly Successful People book, I did look at the list of the seven, because in ISKCON at one time it was the fashion, there's always some fashion or other going on. It was the Seven Habits fashion. So there are things like be proactive, which means you have to see the problem in advance and act to preempt it. A stitch in time saves nine. It's folk wisdom, actually. It's not something that he made up. Of course, things would be much easier if we could see what was going to happen in future. You can't always tell what's going to... Most of the time, there's some idea, but you can't really understand what's going to happen in future. Life is like a chess game. Okay, write it down. Put it in your sayings in the diary. Life... Well, in a chess game, it's much more ordered than life, because there are very restricted factors, but in life there's no saying what's going to happen, who's going to do what, say what. So to some extent we can try to gauge what's going to happen in the future and prepare accordingly. For instance, If I have to get a book printed and it's going to cost so many lakhs of rupees, well, I should start to think about where that money's going to come from before the time of the book, before the book is ready for printing. So that's common sense, but people who don't have that kind of common sense, well, then many people don't. So they're not fit to be leaders. And then, okay, if I act like this, this devotee is, someone is behaving a bit strangely, so how to deal with them? If you tell them directly, they'll get upset and they'll get worse, or maybe if you tell them directly, it'll shake them and they'll improve. There's no saying. In a chess game, you can predict, or you try to predict to some extent, how the opponent will reply, what will be his next move. There are a limited number of moves. But in life, it's much more unpredictable. You really don't know how people are going to react. So, as in corporate management, there is some kind of psychological analysis also. That's also there. But better we take our, just like this, be proactive. Well, that we can learn all these things by studying Mahabharata, various shastras, seeing how Srila Prabhupada dealt with people. We can learn from the Mahajans rather than learning from people who have no clear sense of God consciousness. As far as Kaviism is concerned, one of his great myths is the win-win situation. You act in such, okay, two of us, we're having some disagreement, let's make some solution in which you win and I win. We're both benefited. Well, it's a nice idea, but in the material world, it might happen sometimes. He may give some examples, but generally in this world, the Maya is working against us, so that all our plans, they're spoiled. That the tendency is like that. What we want to happen doesn't happen. We expect that things will happen in such a way, but Maya is always putting some obstacle. Interestingly, this Kavi, his corporation, he merged with another corporation, which is doing the same kind of thing, making lots of money by telling people how to manage and this and that. And when they merged, him and the leader of the other corporation, they just couldn't work with each other at all. They're always talking about empathetic listening and this. But when it actually came that he's the boss of his company, he merged with the boss of another company, but they couldn't work together at all. So it's theoretical. And life is practical. It's not that you simply sit in an office and call people in and tell them, okay, you do this.
Yes, sir.
And they go off and do it exactly as you say, without any prior, everything's completely perfect. It doesn't work like that. And the devotees, you give them a service to do, and then they find their different plan. Okay, go to the market and bring the flower. Then in the meantime, the vehicle gets a puncture, and then so you must be back on time. So then he's driving with a puncture, or the carburetor blows, and he goes on driving the car, and the whole engine blows, and you have to spend 50,000 rupees repairing it. He could have just left the car there and taken an auto rickshaw, for instance, but he didn't think like that. So this is just something. I've been in situations like that also, where devotees, there's steam coming out of the engine and they don't stop because we're all driving together in a convoy of vehicles, and surprise, surprise, the whole vehicle stops, the head is blown, we're stuck in the middle of nowhere in Bangladesh, and it's going to cost a huge amount of money to repair. He could have just stopped and put some water in the engine, but he didn't. So we have to deal with so many. That was a saying, yeah, Einstein, to quote a mundane source, but insightful. Einstein is supposedly said that both the universe and human stupidity are unlimited, and I'm not sure about the first. Think about it. So there's dealing with all kinds of people. Ourselves, we also make so many mistakes in so many ways. When leaders make mistakes, it has a worse effect than when followers. Of course, leaders, they first of all have to be followers. But at least the motive should be pure. It was obvious to everyone, including Satswarup Das Adhikari at the time. No, actually, first of all, yeah, he was not married, then he married, then he was a sannyasi. It was obvious to everyone, including himself, that he wasn't really cut out for leadership and management. It was just not his calling. But anyway, Srila Prabhupada made him a temple president. After that, they made him a GBC member. Leadership, yeah, spiritual leadership, he was appreciated, but in terms of practical management. But Prabhupada said, I am keeping you in that position because you do what I say. So others may have very good management skills, but then Srila Prabhupada himself was justifiably very confident in his own management skills. And he wasn't so much confident in the management skills of many of his disciples, with the exception of Karanda was the first great leader of ISKCON. Unfortunately, he couldn't maintain his position in Krishna consciousness, but Srila Prabhupada entrusted him very much with all kinds of management decisions and would consult him. And then the next one on that level was, the next one who came up was Tamal Krishna, who later took sannyas, and Srila Prabhupada also had a lot of faith in Tamal Krishna Maharaj's management, although sometimes he would check him, sometimes very strongly also, because Tamal Krishna Maharaj was very strong-minded, or some might say strong-headed. So Srila Prabhupada, he appreciated the management qualities of Karanda, Tamal Krishna, Rameshwar, Harikesh. These were devotees who were good in Krishna conscious management. And he appreciated Satsarup also, because of the management skills in the case of Satsarup. But he did appreciate it in the case of others. But he appreciated the desire to serve, that the motive is there to serve. Other managers, Srila Prabhupada, as Hari Shari Prabhu described, Srila Prabhupada, he tried, but he couldn't improve them. In Vrindavan, when the temple was newly opened, Srila Prabhupada had put so much effort, brought so much money, pushed his disciples to send money, got that temple built with great difficulty, and the first manager was Akshayananda Swami and Gopal Krishna Prabhu, not sannyasi at the time, was the GBC member, and Prabhupada was trying to get them to manage it according to his desire. He was very upset with so many discrepancies, and Hari Shri Prabhu described that Prabhupada would come to Vrindavan, and he would, every detail, he'd be on top of it, day and night, literally, day and night. He would, anything wrong, he would try to correct every little thing. And Akshayananda, when Prabhupada would say, why is this not right? And Akshayananda would say, I think we're not sincere enough, Prabhupada. But then the same thing would go on. And then Gopal Krishna, no, Prabhupada, it's all wonderful. And so Prabhupada, he would become angry and angrier and angrier. And at some point, Harishwari Prabhu would describe, after being in Vrindavan for about 2 weeks, he'd just give up. And then he'd just start joking. We're not sincere enough. Everything's wonderful. He'd mimic them. Harishwari described. So what to do? But he did appreciate this sincerity of the devotees in trying to serve. They're sacrificing, doing what they can. Of course, it can be that one sacrifices, but it's not all for Krishna. Of course, there are so many leaders who... No one in the material world gets into a big position without much... Well, in most cases, there's that saying, some people are born great, some achieve greatness, and some have greatness thrust upon them. So it may be that some don't really do anything to become great in that, to get a high position, although it's understood it's from previous life. But generally, if one comes up and in a leadership position, they have to struggle. Napoleon didn't become Napoleon just by sitting on a throne and putting a crown on his head. He had to struggle. So many difficulties went through, so much determination. But he was a demon, according to the description of Bhagavad Gita. He wasn't a devotee. So it may be that we're doing things, working hard, but the motive has to be seen also. If the motive for self-aggrandizement, I will be seen as a leader, I will show what wonderful things I'm doing, becomes very dangerous. And there may be a fine line between thinking, I want to do all this for the pleasure of Prabhupada, the pleasure of Krishna, pleasure of Guru Maharaj. I want to offer so many nice things, so many books distributed, so many new devotees. There may be a fine line between that and thinking how I want to offer all these things and others will see and I will be appreciated. We may be doing it for the pleasure of Guru and Krishna, but also thinking how I will be noted for the pleasure that I'm giving. So it may be a very fine line, which we may not even recognize in our own heart. There may be some egoism there also, that, oh, in future people will see what great things I've done, and they'll praise, and maybe in future there'll be something like the Chaitanya Charitamrita of ISKCON, and my name will be in there also, or Bhakti Ratnakam. At least my name should be there. Let's pray for that. There may be something playing for the future. It may be noticed. So as leaders themselves know, in dealing with devotees, you just can't force them to be completely pure in their motives or to be completely perfect in their activities. You have to indulge them to some extent. Just like the example is given in the Bhagavatam, in the Upanishads also, that in controlling the senses, it's like controlling a horse. You have to keep on a tight rein, but if it's too tight, then the horse will rebel. There has to be, you have to give them a little room, little leeway, so that they're not completely and totally controlled. So control has to be there, but some leeway, especially Grihastha devotees. We can't expect them to surrender in the way that brahmacharis. Brahmacharis are supposed to surrender completely. For them, there's no saying no, or no, they're under discipline all the time. And Grihasthas are supposed to be also, but in a different way, and with a much more extent of independence. So impure motive, the motive should be very pure of all devotees, or those in leadership positions. If they have some other motive, then they may do things very well, but the end the overall result will not be very good. It may be that buildings are built, devotees are made, books are distributed, but because they themselves don't have, they're not doing all for Krishna, then that spirit of mixed devotion is imparted to others. In other words, for all their efforts, it looks very good, but no one's actually becoming a pure devotee. And they'll be having mixed motives for power, position, showing who's better than others, and so on, or just some very crass thing like living comfortably. As, what is that, I heard someone saying that, oh yeah, I'm quite happy, brahmachari, living in the temple. It's quite good, I have a nice air-conditioned room. And what is this? Saying to someone who was thinking of joining the temple, saying, yeah, it's quite good, yeah, I'm living quite comfortably, as if that was the criteria. Live comfortably, that there you, if you want to live comfortably, if that's your motive, then you go and work and you get an apartment and buy your own air conditioner. But we shouldn't think that, measure devotional service in terms of our material facilities. On the other hand, we may want to give responsible positions to those who are enthusiastic for various reasons. Because there aren't that many people who are enthusiastic or capable of spreading Krishna consciousness. And Srila Prabhupada, he was expert in finding devotees with energy and ability and harnessing that in Krishna's service and getting so many things done. Even though devotees, they may have been doing it for various reasons, may not have been a completely pure motive, but Srila Prabhupada endeared them all to him and engaged them in his service and held them to advance with the idea that let them serve Krishna, let them engage their energy in Krishna's service, and that will purify them. And in this way, the movement spread amazingly quickly. I'm not saying that everyone who Srila Prabhupada gave leadership role was materially motivated, but that Srila Prabhupada saw that different people had different kinds of energy and dynamism, and he would, in many cases, give them the opportunity, okay, go, do it. Go off to London and just a little training, and okay, go and do something for Krishna. When no one had ever, in London, there'd been no Krishna consciousness there. So in that way, the movement was able to be spread quickly. He encouraged actually a competitive spirit among his followers to some extent. And his leading followers, in retrospect, probably emphasized too much on competition and not enough on cooperation, which he also fostered. And the movement became competitive to its own detriment. There are different leaders in different areas competing with each other, trying to outdo each other. And for that, they would also be very much pushing them, the followers under them, to do more and more and more without caring so much about the personal development of the devotees under them, but just trying to get the job done. It's the perennial dilemma within our movement of seeing to the individual's benefit and doing the needful for spreading the movement, because the two aren't necessarily the same. If we ask devotees, for instance, to go on a book distribution marathon, it may mean that for several weeks they rest very little, they read very little, and they're out on the streets or whatever, distributing books for hours at a time. So physically that can be very exhausting. And also, although definitely a lot of mercy devotees experience in that, in distributing books, if we try to just go on like that forever and ever, at some point they feel a need, I need to spend time for more chanting and reading. You just can't go on and on and on like that. But if the leaders try to push the devotees more and more so he can show more results, his motive is to show more results, then he's not caring for the devotees enough. But then if you put so much emphasis on caring for them without pushing them to spread the movement or to make sacrifices, we put so much emphasis on caring for them, well, part of the caring for them is to push them also to surrender in various ways. So exactly where the balance comes, there's no fixed line where the balance is. And that's part of a leader's quality also, to discriminate about these things. But anyway, the real leadership is with concern for spreading the movement, for bringing devotees up in Krishna consciousness, for maintaining one's own level of Krishna consciousness. I personally am not, I don't want to indulge or to prolong the leadership role of a devotee in whom it is perceived, usually not only by myself but by others also, but rarely in the case of those who are the subject of this criticism, it's perceived that they may have some, or they have some other motive in bringing people to Krishna consciousness other than a pure devotional service. They may be dovetailing their propensity to deal with people, bring people in, be a leader. They may be dovetailing that propensity, but it's not in a manner which is very Krishna conscious. There may be material methods of psychologically manipulating others, giving some material facility and material guidance and so many things. So the whole thing becomes, even though in some ways the number of devotees is increasing, looks good, but no one's advancing beyond the neophyte platform, because the leader himself, for all his ability in bringing others in, himself has not properly advanced beyond the neophyte platform. So when leaders are on the neophyte platform, there will be an expansion in neophyte consciousness. So I am not interested in indulging such leadership. The leaders themselves, first of all, have to be very pure in their motives and not simply dovetailing some material propensities, so that purity of motive means Krishna te kila cheshta. Everything should be done for Krishna, only for Krishna. That is the motto of a devotee. Nothing for me. Apart from that, one in leadership has to be able to discriminate right from wrong, what should be done, what should not be done. Truth. All devotees have to discriminate reality from what is reality, what is illusion, what is truth, what is falsehood. But a leader has to do so also not only on a theoretical or philosophical platform, but practically. What he has to see by dealing with people in such a way or making such a decision, will it benefit others or will it harm others? Of course, usually in this world, it's not that something is 100% beneficial and 0% harmful or vice versa. It's often mixed. Often something good comes with some measure of something undesirable. So that's a lot in decision making. That, well, if we do this, it'll be good, but it'll have some bad effect also. So these questions come all the time. For instance, some devotee is sincerely serving. Now he's going to get married. We want him to continue his service. So should we Maybe we should pay him so he can continue his service. Then service continues, and then they want more facility. Children are coming, the less service because more children, and needs, financial needs are increasing, so they want more money with less service. And you may say, well, phew, just cut them out. We can't just go on like this, paying for, with no, there should be some output of service. And then, so we cut them out, and then they become upset, and they see, I gave everything to the movement, and then they threw me out, and now I don't know what to do. There's so many decisions have to be made, and which affect people's lives. Yesterday I initiated over 100 devotees, and it's you're also dealing with all these devotees. Actually, on a day-to-day basis, you as leaders are dealing with these devotees more intimately than I am doing. So it's a great responsibility for all of you to interact with people. And we see even devotees, sometimes you see devotees, they've been in the movement for several years, they've read the books, they seem to be doing very well, all of a sudden something goes wrong in their mind, or something happens to them, the child dies, or something like this, and then they just go, almost as if they forgot the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, all they've been doing all these years. And or they may, people who you trusted may turn against you, there's no saying. But a leader must discriminate and try and understand what will be beneficial, not only for the individual, but for all concerned. Usually people, when they come and they're seeking some guidance, often they seek guidance in practical matters also, but they're just basically thinking about their own interest or that of their family. They don't see the whole picture. But the leader has to see that, for instance, some devotee has misbehaved. He's asking for another chance. Okay, give another chance. Again misbehaves. Again asks for another chance. But then we're thinking, okay, we can be merciful to this devotee and give him another chance. But on the other hand, if we just let him again and again misbehave, then that will send a bad message to all the other devotees, who will then think that, well, it doesn't matter, you can do wrong and get away with it, and no one cares, in the name of being merciful. So sometimes the mercy of a leader comes by acting in a way which doesn't seem merciful to the individual, but that's to protect the group. Mercy, there should be some discrimination also, because if there's only mercy and there's no justice, then people who are of not good motive, they will take advantage of that. Justice is also required. Mercy means that there is a justice system, and but sometimes what should justly be given, some kind of retribution or punishment, all right, we won't give it. We have faith that, all right, we have faith that you did wrong, but you want to be right, so we give you a chance. But then, if there's no justice, and only so-called mercy, then people who are not very sincere will take advantage of that. So sometimes the leaders, they become blamed, that, oh, it's so heavy, so strict, you should just love everyone. This absurd idea that loving people means to let them do whatever they like. Where did this idea of love come from? Some demoniac idea of love, which is not love at all. But these are the things leaders all the time have to deal with, that should someone be corrected or just let it go for the time being? How far to correct them? Say something. Often you're afraid if you say something, they may often because devotees, they're on the platform of egoism. So if you say something, actually, Prabhu, you shouldn't do that. No, 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 and then they become upset. Why should they become upset? They shouldn't become upset, but they do. So you may let it go, then let it go, and then they become worse. And then you have to try to deal with the problem when it's at a worse stage. Or you may not deal with it thinking, well, anyway, they may just get better. You can't tell. You can never tell. How much is too much? How much to discipline? How much is too much? Or just leave with very little discipline and just try to encourage them. You can't tell exactly how things are going to work out. Very important, leaders should not seem to be partial, to have their special devotees who they look after, their chamchas, who they look after, and they those ones will always support them. When others express some difficulties with the leaders and they have their coterie around them, so the leader himself doesn't have to personally get on the case of those who are expressing some difficulty. He has his men who'll do that, and they do that in return for some material material benefit. We see this. It shouldn't happen in a spiritual organization, but unfortunately it does. So if I see any such thing, I want to dismantle that rather than let it go on. It may look good in terms of number of devotees and this and that, but it's not what Srila Prabhupada came from the spiritual world to give us. I'm going over time here, so we have to have our meeting. There's a lot more to say. Maybe I'll say it some other time. Hare Krishna. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, who among His unlimited transcendental qualities was the most amazing leader of all. Only He could lead them. Volume 2 of Prabhupada Lilamrita is titled, Only He Could Lead Them. Hare Krishna.